I call this conference committee to order today. Thank you all for attending. Monday morning, hello, Senator Dibble. Welcome, Representative Hornstein. Thanks for taking time today. I know the House is going back in at 11 on the floor, but then they're going to recess. What's the Senate doing today?
Not a lot of stuff. We'll be on the floor, and I hear it's a light note.
Are we in our Zoom?
Excuse me. Could you use a mic because the room is not conducive to the hearing for some of us.
It's not set up.
We don't have microphones in this room.
Oh.
So we'll talk louder because I can do that.
Okay.
So
thank you.
Thanks. Yep. So today, what we are here today to do is to look at the side-by-side and some of the differences in the House File 224. And I think what we will do is I'm going to refer to counsel and do a little bit of walkthrough.
Madam Chair and members, we'll start walking through the provisions between the House and Senate. Working off of the side-by-side. So starting on page R1, section 1 is a Senate-only provision, and that's one of a couple of different sections. It's also found in sections 11 and 19. The substantive part of it is later, and this is on a pilot program for local units of government to establish traffic safety diversion. So it would be, instead of a citation, certain traffic violations could be handled through an educational pilot program. Section 1 on the House side, Section 2 on the Senate side, makes a couple of modifications on construction contracts and interest payment accruals. And then going to page R2, the top of R2, Section 3, is another Senate-only provision that establishes a new memorial bridge on Trunk Highway 60. Also on R2, Section 2 on the House side, Section 4.
Ms. Burris, can you point out when the language is identical? For example, is Section 1 and 2 of the Senate House identical?
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, yes. I will try to add that in. The language is identical, by the way, on the payment contractor provisions on R1.
Okay, thank you.
On R2, Section 2, House side, Section 4, Senate side. Again, this is identical language and makes a modification on timing for when there are MnDOT contract defaults and steps that MnDOT can take in redoing the contract. Section 3, House side, Section 5, Senate side. There are some differences. This is a provision on MnDOT performing some analysis regarding bike head facilities prior to being able to sell excess property. And there are a couple of provisions of points of difference on that extends to page R3 to a Senate-only piece. Page R3, House, Section 4, Senate, Section 6. Contains a modification in the timing and data used by MnDOT for state aid, providing more flexibility on estimating revenues coming in to identify the amount for state aid. There's another similar version of that. So this one is, this is the county state aid. There's a similar municipal state aid street version of this just ahead. That's identical language. Section 5 on the House side, Section 7 Senate side eliminates a obsolete cross-reference to town levies. There's a levy requirement that was eliminated a couple of years ago. At the very bottom of R3, the substance on the next page is the municipal state aid side of the state aid estimates provision. Again, that's identical language between the House and Senate. Also on R4, sections 7 and 8 on the House side and 9 and 10 on the Senate side modify some of the powers and duties of counties in relation to town bridges. And reporting and inspections and billing and actions that counties are empowered to take and are required to take when towns don't act on some bridge-related requirements. That's identical language as well in both of those sections between House and Senate. Moving to page R5, section 11 is a Senate-only provision. This is another piece of the traffic diversion program language. On page R6, section 9 on the House side, is, as well as section 10, and then on the Senate side, sections 12 and 13 make modifications to requirements on U-turns and allows for some vehicles with a larger configuration to be able to make a wider U-turn. So it's a couple different versions of that. That's identical language between House and Senate. On page R7, section 14 is a Senate-only provision that modifies bicycle riding rules where a bicyclist would be required to ride in a lane on roads with a speed limit of 30 miles an hour or less, as well as a provision in paragraph B that allows bicyclists to proceed straight through some intersections from the right turn lane. Also on R7, section 15 is a Senate-only provision that goes along with a number of other, in relation to a number of other sections on covered farm vehicles. The Senate-only provisions would establish some requirements on when a covered farm vehicle is stopped and when a commercial vehicle inspection can be performed on the covered farm vehicle. Then on page R8, there is the beginning of a number of sections relating to regulations of covered farm vehicles. Mm-hmm. And I'll just list them out rather than going section by section. The basic idea is there's some changes in federal law, and the statutory changes with regard to state law would correspond to the federal law exemptions from commercial driver's licenses, some commercial driver license regulations, and general regulations around operation of covered farm vehicles that aren't carrying hazardous materials. So it starts on page R8, but it's a number of sections. On the House side, it's sections 11 through 13, 15 and 16, 19 to 20, 28, part of 28. On the Senate side, it's sections 16 to 18, 20 to 21, 24 to 25, and 34, paragraph G. I'll just touch on those as we flip through. So most of those provisions are identical between House and Senate. There are a couple of technical differences. One of the technical differences is on page R9, and this is actually starts at the very bottom of R8, section 13 on the House side, section 18 on the Senate side. Slight difference in cross-referencing federal law. Page R9 also contains a House-only provision. This is section 14, which would establish eliminate a requirement, I guess, a better way to put it, for portable toilet service vehicles so that the weight restrictions that are set by local units of government and spring load restrictions would not apply to certain vehicles that are used for collecting and transporting liquid waste. Page R10. And continuing on for a couple of pages, contains the substance of the traffic safety diversion program that was touched on earlier. That's a Senate-only provision. And that brings us to page R13. R13 and the next couple of pages beyond that consist of some of the pieces of the covered farm vehicle provisions. This part is identical between House and Senate. House Section 15, Senate Section 20. That continues on page R14, kind of in the middle of the page, House Section 16, Senate Section 21. Again, that's identical language as part of covered farm vehicles. Page R16, House Section 17, Senate Section 22 modifies requirements on when funds can be used and when they're available out of the Transportation Economic Development account. Some of the older funds would be made available until expended under the change. This is identical between House and Senate. Section 18 in the House, 23 in the Senate, also on R16, would push out by 4 years, 2018, the expiration date on the Advisory Committee on Non-Motorized Transportation. That's a MnDOT Advisory Committee. Section 19 on the House side and Section 24 on the Senate side is another piece of the covered farm vehicle legislation, and then there is another technical difference there between House and Senate. Another piece of covered farm vehicle.
Yeah, sure. Mr. Bruce, before you push on, you point out the technical, is that lines 12.23 and 24 in the House language?
Madam Chair, Senator Reiner, that's correct. It's 12.23, 12.24 on the House side, and 17.8 on the Senate side. The House language narrows down where what's covered in the exemption. Bottom of R16, Section 20, House side, Section 25, Senate side is another piece of the covered farm vehicle provisions. And then on page R17, Section 21 on the House side, Section 26 on the Senate side makes a update in terminology. This was terminology that was changed a number of years ago, but this section of law, it was changed elsewhere in the chapter. This section of law was missed at that point. Towards the bottom of R17, Section 22 on the House side and extending from 22 to 26, and then Section 27 on the Senate side and continuing through Section 30 makes some modifications to trunk highway bond. There were two different laws passed on authorizing trunk highway bonds for a maintenance facility in Rochester. So it was done in session law in two different years, and the effect of these changes is to shift some of the dollars. So it's not a net increase or decrease in trunk highway bond authorizations or appropriations. It's moving from the authorizing language in one of the laws to the other of the laws. The language is identical between House and Senate, except for the House on R18 picks up a Section 23. With bonding, there's an appropriation, which is the language that provides spending authority to an agency, but there's also the authorization to sell bonds. And so the House language includes a corresponding change in the amount of authorization to reflect the adjustment in the appropriation. I'd also point out that these sections are included in House File 3172, which is the supplemental budget bill. That bill is currently in conference committee, so it's not been closed out, but these provisions have been adopted at this point by that conference committee. On page R19, Section 26 on the House side, Section 30 Senate language, makes an adjustment to a cancellation. This is also in trunk highway bonds. It increases part of the cancellation for some flood funding. This, again, is identical between House and Senate, and is also included and has been adopted at this point by the House File 3172 Conference Committee. And then on page R20, section 27 on the House side, section 31 Senate side, adds a requirement on a turnback for Trunk Highway 66, providing a copy of the turnback agreement. At the bottom, that's identical language. And then also on R20, section 32 on the Senate side establishes a requirement on adding general purpose lanes instead of dynamic shoulder lanes on a segment of Interstate 494.
Madam Chair, I have a question. Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Burris. On the section 32 on the Senate language, I understand that MnDOT has has a plan to finance this project envisioned in 21-3 through 21-7. Do we have to do any kind of enabling legislation, or is that, how is that going to work exactly with lining up this language with the financing that that MnDOT is talking about?
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, I'm not familiar with where MnDOT has been with the plans for funding of this. This would be a requirement rather than enabling. They'll have broad discretionary authority to pursue trunk highway projects, and they are appropriated funds as part of each budget to identify a set of projects and pursue them. The requirement in this section would really direct how some aspects of how this particular project would be done. Without this requirement, MnDOT could choose to pursue general purpose lands. So this wouldn't. If this were included, it would direct them. If it weren't included, it would then be agency discretion.
Okay.
So it would kind of depend on what the agency has indicated.
Okay. Thank you.
On page R21, section 33 is a Senate-only provision that establishes some user fees for the new legislative office facility parking ramp.
Right.
And then R21, section 28 on the House side, section 34 on the Senate side contains a couple of repealers. One of the repealers goes along with the covered farm vehicles. That's the paragraph B repealer. That's substantially recreated. It's essentially part of a recodification. Paragraph A is removal of one of the routes on the trunk highway system that's part of a turnback in Brainerd. And that, Madam Chair, concludes the provisions in the side-by-side.
Okay, thank you. So if we were to look at the thank you, Senator Reinhart. If we were to look at the House Offer Conference Committee's sheet, should we start there? And then we do want to jump down to help out another conference committee that is going to be starting in a couple of minutes. So if we were to look at the House Offers, there's some of the to accept that. We just did it. Okay. If we jump down to the bottom half of the page where we are talking about the if we could jump down to the periodic review of real property owned by MnDOT, if we could just hear your perspective, and then maybe we'll come back to that at a later time.
Madam Chair, would you like us to do that standing?
I don't know. How are we going to do that?
If we could, I think a chair is better.
Yes,
so
I do too.
We can just pull up one of the audience chairs.
Sorry. How many do you need? Can we sit you down?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Many members. I'm Brian Dodds. I'm the Director of Land Management for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I manage our real estate acquisition program. Paragraph C of the proposed amendment to 16144, it's kind of redundant to some other statutes that we currently have, specifically 117.226, which is just being handed out now. I'm just going to walk through that statute and just kind of highlight some of the similarities and a couple of key differences to comply with federal law. I'm going to start on line four of this. It says the authority must offer to sell the property to the owner from whom it was acquired if the former owner can be located. Very similar to what you proposed. Again, your proposal in 16144 is specific to the Department of Transportation, the Commissioner of Transportation, versus 117.226, which is just general to all agencies. Continuing, the offer must be at the original price determined by the condemnation process or the current fair market value of the property, whichever is lower. So should it be lower today than how it was acquired, that's an additional benefit for the property owner. Except to the extent that a different value is required for a property interest obtained with federal highway funding under U.S. Code Title 23 or transit funding under U.S. Code Title 49. This is an additional difference that should we be using federal funds to acquire this property, that happens occasionally. They do require that we get fair market value when we sell these properties. So that's a federal requirement. So we would seek that paragraph C not be included.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ryder?
Madam Chair. I know when this was being discussed in the Senate, there was some concern in the Senate provision that I think we made another adjustment to, but could you talk about the concern was around the ability to transfer a property to a local unit of government that might be interested in using it for a similar purpose, and it's my understanding that statute 117.226 is better.
Madam Chair and Senator Reiner. Let me just look at it for a second. Okay, yes, the 117 here, we have before offering surplus property to local governments, commissioner, it doesn't even apply to the Department of Transportation. I think you're asking when we convey to a local public agency, that's covered under subdivision 1 of 16144, where it says notwithstanding any provisions of this section under section 16123 of the contractor, fee title to or an easement in all or part of the lands and lands previously acquired in fee for trunk highways or acquired pursuant to 16123 in excess of what is needed for highway purposes may be conveyed in quick claim for public purposes to any political subdivision, Indian tribal government, or agency of the state.
So, Madam Chair, that issue is not really pertinent to either section. Right, the language we adopted with the current statute 117.226. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So if we start back at the top of the, in section one, we're going to work on the same and the similar provisions, and so we'll get those out of the way.
Madam Chair and members, the first one would be on R1, Section 1 on the House side, Section 2 on the Senate. This is identical language between House and Senate. And this is on penalties for contractor late payments and partial payments.
I move the Senate language for Section 2.
Madam Chair, I'm fine with that as long as that doesn't get counted against us.
Well, I guess so first.
I'm going to keep the hat.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those no? Motion carried.
Then the next one, Madam Chair and members, is on page R2, and this is with the deadline for amending the deadline for when a contract with MnDOT is considered to be in default, and MnDOT can take steps on negotiating with others and sort of reworking the contract. And, this is identical.
I move the House language. All those in favor, or any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No.
And Madam Chair, the next one.
Motion passes.
The next one is on page R3. It's section 4 in the House, section 6 in the Senate. This is one of the state aid estimating provisions.
Is there any discussion? I move section, the Senate language, section 6. Section 6. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? No. Motion carried. Passes.
The next one is at the very bottom. Oh, sorry. The next one actually is right after that. Is also on R3, House Section 5, Senate Section 7. This is the adjustment to the old obsolete town levy language, eliminating that language.
Okay, I move the House language on Section 5. Is any discussion on that? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Motion carried.
And then at the bottom, Madam Chair and members, of R3 substances on the next page, this is the other MnDOT estimating for state aid provision, House Section 6, Senate Section 8.
Okay. I move the Senate language, Section 8. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Motion carried.
Madam Chair, also on R4, Sections 7 and 8 on the House side, Sections 9 and 10 on the Senate side contain the identical language. This is on county powers and duties with respect to town bridges.
I move the House Section 7 and Section 8 language. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. Motion carried.
The next identical provisions are on page R6, extending on to R7. This is House Sections 9 and 10, Senate Sections 12 and 13 on making wide U-turns for certain vehicle configurations.
Thank you. We have one of these in Canterbury Park, so I hope we have unanimous support on this one. I move Senate language Section 12 and 13 language. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion carried.
And then, Madam Chair and members, the next identical is on the Transportation Economic Development Accounts. Kind of skipping forward here to page R16.
Actually, Madam Chair, back in R8, we do have, there are two of the three covered vehicle provisions that are, I think, identical in both bills, so it might be, as long as we're moving through, we can just take those and then just go on and have some conversation.
Special pieces.
Would be sections, your section 11, our section 16, subsections B and C, I believe, are identical.
There's 11 and 12, and ours is 16 and
17. Oh, thank you. Sections 11 and 12 in the House bill, sections 16 and 17 in the Senate bill.
Okay.
Okay, but subdivision B and?
Well, the sections.
That's all. So just section 16 and 17? Okay, let's just, I move the Senate language, section 16 and 17. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carried.
And then, Madam Chair and members, on page R13, there's another piece of the covered farm vehicles, section 15 on the House side, section 20 on the Senate.
Okay, I move language for section 20, Senate, section 20. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried.
Madam Chair and members, R14. Contains another piece of the covered farm vehicle, section 16 on the House side, section 21 on the Senate side.
Okay, I move House section 16. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
And then on R16, Madam Chair and members, section 17 on the House side, section 22 on the Senate side, makes an adjustment to use of funds in the TED account, Transportation Economic Development account.
Okay, I move House Section 17. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed,
aye.
No. Motion carried.
Just below that, Madam Chair and members, Section 18 on the House side, Section 23 on the Senate side is the extension of the non-motorized Advisory Committee expiration to 2018.
I move section Senate section 23 language. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carried.
Madam Chair and members, I'll skip over the technical difference on that next one. And so the bottom of R16, section 20 on the House side, section 25 Senate side is another piece of the covered farm vehicles provisions.
Yeah. I move Senate section 25 language. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried.
On page R17, section 21, House side, section 26, Senate language. This contains the terminology update on local government bidding for transportation projects online.
I move House Section 21 language. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carried.
And then, Madam Chair and members, R17 at the bottom, Section 22 on the House side, and continuing on a couple of sections. This is the trunk highway bond provisions, and the conference committee could add that in here or could avoid duplication in all likelihood by just leaving it out of this conference committee report and expecting that it would get picked up in House File 3172.
So what do you advise me to say? What do you want?
Just, Madam Chair, so you're talking, Mr. Burris, sections in the Senate bill 27 and 28, along with section 23 in the House bill?
Madam Chair, Senator Reiner, yes, as well as section 29, and the same thing is the case for Senate section 30 and House sections 25 and 26. So all of those are potentially duplicated. They're identical to what has been adopted at this point by the 3172 conference committee. So
there's
not a conflict in place. It would, if it were left out here, it would avoid duplication.
And the language has been adopted.
It's been adopted, yes. Now, the conference committee, you know, said that could open it up again and remove it, but
could explode and break down, and nobody will pass the special session.
So we're pretty confident you'll be okay. So what if we don't make a motion on it or move it?
Madam Chair, if there were no motion, then it wouldn't be included here.
Okay.
And then, Madam Chair and members, that takes us to page R20, section 27 on the House language, section 31 Senate language. This is a modification to one of the trunk highway turnback provisions from last year.
I move House sections 27 language. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried.
On page R21, Madam Chair and members, section 28 on the House side, section 34 on the Senate side. This is a couple of repealers. One's on trunk highway turnback, and the other is on recodification of covered farm vehicles.
I move Senate section 34 language. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Okay. Then the let's go to R2, the R2 Senate language section 3. This was in the Senate but not in the House language. As part of our offer, I would go ahead and offer Senate language section 3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carried. If we went to R20. The general purpose lane for I-494, the Senate language 32, I move Senate language 32, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. Motion carried. And then the R21, Senate language section 33, the parking ramp financing. I move the Senate language section 33. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carried. Let's go to R18. Okay, so now we are going to go to not R18, but let's.
Madam Chair, yep. Just to be clear, we don't need to address Section 23 in the House bill since that is part of that's being covered elsewhere.
Madam Chair, Senator Ryan, that's correct. That's part of what's covered in the supplemental budget bill.
Thank you. Because I was ready to take the House bill.
I did put a little hash mark on chair on the side just because of our desire alone.
Desire to work together. That's great. Okay, so let's go to the rest of the page where we need to for further discussion and with public input as well.
Madam Chair, if I could just suggest, I know there are some folks here to talk about the diversion program.
Okay.
Maybe we can pick up a couple of the easier things and just get them out of the way.
Sure.
I would, on the
the MnDOT property issue. You know, having had a chance to hear from the department as well as meet with them on this issue. For the House members, this was a floor amendment, which I did support on the floor with a modification. But if we look at section of statute section 117.226, it reads almost identical to what we added in. And, you know, MnDOT's testimony here as well as conversation with myself was that this covers them as well as other state agencies, gets us to the same place, and leaving this amendment in potentially causes conflict as they move forward and try to follow two different sections of statute that aren't identical. So, unless you're being advised otherwise, I'm prepared to just leave that be. I'm not going to move that amendment.
Senator.
Madam Chair, Senator Reinhart, would you say that this statute perhaps gives them a little more flexibility when dealing with the land related to local governments? I mean, as I read it, it appears to say you know, that they can, it doesn't necessarily have to be at a particular price, and I actually like that flexibility. And it, I had a situation in Morrison County where they worked with the local government and found a solution that both of them appreciated. But I do appreciate that the private property owner has a right in here first, you know, and seeing this language as it is now, it looks decent.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelke, you're right. And the current statute, I think, is a better deal for the original private property owner. You know, should the value have fallen over time, that will be their reacquisition price versus the amendment we added, which doesn't allow that flexibility. So it seems like the existing statute is better all there.
Okay. So we'll move on. What would you like to vote to next?
Madam Chair, I would suggest either the bicycle or the porta potties. Maybe we go hand in hand.
Maybe we can put porta potties on a trailer on the back of bicycles.
Well. Sounds like a Minneapolis.
Okay, let's do bike riding today. So go to R7 on the side by side.
Madam Chair. Speak on this, and I've called her, and she should be on her way, so if you could be glad.
Okay. Well, should we do the porta potty, which is R9. Okay. First, is there anybody here that would like to testify on R9 discussion?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. This provision does concern us primarily because the allowed axle weight limit during spring load restrictions is 26,000 pounds under this amendment. And even our standard all-year-round axle weight limit for trunk highways, which is probably the strongest highways in the state, is 20,000 pounds. So during a period when our roads are most fragile, this would allow a weight above and beyond what's allowed during normal times of the year. So for that reason, we'd speak against it.
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair and Mr. Peterson, how many vehicles are we talking about here? It doesn't seem like there's a lot of them, but unlike other industries where I would have a lot of concerns about this, how many vehicles are in this industry that would be impacting the roads?
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, I don't know. There seem to be quite a few foot of high is around that.
Senator Kasalka?
I'm good either way. I was one once. Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, can you, we can hear this on the Senate side, so maybe just give me a little bit of a background on it.
Madam Chair, this was an amendment on the floor from Representative McNamara, and I think that, I think his argument was there was some urgency around, because of the proliferation of these porta potties, and there's a public health issue in terms of making sure that there was timely cleanup. Not so much public health, but nuisance kind of issue. Sure. So I think that was his argument.
And, Madam Chair, I would just note that the Senate was aware of the House's action when that bill came forward, and given MnDOT's concern, no amendments on that were offered, so we didn't have any discussion on it. So.
Hello. Friday.
Hi, I'm Abby Bright with the Association of Minnesota Counties. We worked with Representative McNamara on this amendment. Once it had been adopted, apparently there was some miscommunication in the drafting. So we understand that what was being actually requested isn't a huge increase in the weight of 26,000 per axle of gross vehicle weight. However, you kind of have a longstanding position to oppose weight limit exemptions, especially during spring thaw. And there are some in statute, but we really try to vet them very thoroughly. We would prefer to have this discussion with the bill in a hearing so we can better understand the concerns of the porta-potty haulers. There's a lack of understanding currently as to what their real concerns are. And the previous exemptions, we definitely hear from folks saying, why don't you just let them go through? And because we've really put people through the ringer when they request to have these exemptions. So we would ask that this would not be adopted at this time, but that we could look at it next session.
Madam Chair, I would like to know how many porta potties you can get on a truck and what a porta potty weighs. This might be academic anyway. And can anybody in the room answer that? Please.
Madam Chair, Representative Sundin, I don't have an answer for you right now on that, but I believe that the trucks in question aren't actually transporting the porta potty facility. Rather, it's the waste product that's being transported.
Tanker.
It's a tanker.
So once
vehicle.
The servicing equipment.
Yes, and my understanding of this is limited, Madam Chair, but I believe that part of the discussion around this is that that liquids need to be transported both. It's not just a one-way thing.
Both ways.
Yeah.
Any other discussion?
I'm not sure if there's anyone from the industry or Representative Mac to speak on the pro side.
I don't have a note from me. Anybody else?
We can't hear you.
Is there anybody from the industry here to speak to this issue? Or, I guess my question is, what's the difference between spring and, I know the road condition of spring, but I mean, wouldn't it be, 4th of July weekend would be, I would think that this is an ongoing issue, not just springtime. I mean, all summer long could be heavier weights. And I understand that the roads are more sensitive in the springtime, but would we want to increase the limit the rest of the season as well? Or, is there a difference there?
Madam Chair, Scott Peterson again. Actually, unless there's a permit created for this type of hauling, this a load of 26,000 pounds per axle would actually be illegal most of the rest of the year, or all the rest of the year as well.
Senator Diddles?
Well, Madam Chair, I really feel a strong desire to learn more about the subject. I'm just thinking about the parks, the regional parks in Minneapolis, the lakes, where the parkways either recently have been rehabilitated or those that haven't are in just atrocious shape. And just undermining that investment, getting further behind. You know, 26,000 pounds per axle sounds like a lot to me. It sounds like it could really beat up the roads, parkways. And we can barely keep up with them as it is because there's a lot of pressure around the lakes and the creek and all of that, the river.
Senator Brenner? Should we go ahead? Okay. Should we just move on? Okay, no action. Okay. Yes, Representative Kahn, let's go back to R7. Do you know what, Kevin? Can I just keep going, or do I have to go into it? All right. We are looking at the language on R7, Senate Section 14. Representative Kahn, do you have some comments?
Yes. The language that I delivered to somebody, the current manager, I hope the member, I thought also Scott had a copy of it. It's a suggested amendment from the Minnesota Bicycle Alliance. And Dorian Grilly, who's the head guy in that, is supposedly on his way, but we're not sure when he's going to. I don't know if he's coming by bike or as he usually does. I'm not sure when he's getting here. But this, the suggested language is much better. It's kind of what bicyclists do. It's much more understandable to them. And as far to the right, I tweeted some pictures on the first day I was doing a serious bike ride that showed what the bike lane looked like. This was on University Avenue in Southeast Minneapolis, and it had a heap of piled ice going three quarters of the way across it. And to say that the bicyclists could have been there was unbelievable. The problem with the 30-mile limit is that most of the places where this is a problem would be, a 30-mile limit would only be within towns, within cities and so forth. And most of the places where this is needed is where there isn't, where we have ordinary speed limits, not a 30-mile speed limit.
Madam Chair.
Senator
Ryder.
Thank you. Representative Kahn, I think, and Senator Dibble can jump in here too, to reflect the fairly lengthy floor discussion that took place in the Senate on this provision. Was a safety concern from members that in a roadway above 30 miles an hour you might have a situation. And I'm asking because I know you're an avid biker. A car
probably
going,
biked in every district of everyone on this.
I'm not sure about mine because mine's really.
I'm
hilly.
Sure.
A car going 55 miles or over, coming over a hill, and a biker in the traffic lane not being. I mean, I think reflecting the conversation, it was just a concern for safety.
Well, the bicycle is a vehicle, and one of the things we've discovered is that a state can't have, because we have this national requirement of uniform laws, a state really can't have stronger restrictive laws. For example, one of the things that I was involved in, one of the things that our bicycle law says, one of the things, and a locality can't have stricter laws than the state has, one of the things that our bicycle law specifically says is that bicyclists do not have to use a bike path when that's available. At one point, it said that it did, and that was repealed because it's sort of bad practice. You don't want to looking at certain places, you know, where cars are actually going slowly and where the bike path is filled with maybe kids on tricycles and so forth. You don't want a high-speed bicycle on that bike path. And that actually went to court when, of course, Minneapolis tried to force bicycles onto the bike paths. So it's really important to have uniform laws, and it's important to have them in understandable in a way that bicyclists can understand them. And it's nothing, you know, this language is, because when you look at our state law, when you look at, you know, when you look at the existing law that we're not, you know, that we're not taking out, you know, a bicyclist does have the right to take a full lane and so forth. But this language is really sensible, and it really means, you know, cars do, whether they're going 55 or 65 or whatever, they do have to look out for bicycles. The worst one has often been in the right-hand turn. That's the, I know the daughter of the famous, the former state epidemiologist was killed by a truck doing a right-hand turn and not even looking to see the bicycles. Bicycles is exactly what they're supposed to do and just running over her. Two accidents that I've had, I almost had and avoided, was a bike, again, as I'm in the right hand, when a car making the right hand turn, and the two things that they said, both times I wasn't hurt, and one turn, both times I was able to turn with the car, and one time I had my hand, one hand on the car's door as I was turning around. And the two things they said was, I didn't realize you were going so fast, and then the next thing they said was, I didn't see you. And so, you know, I think to put very much more kinds of restrictions of what bicyclists can do and not just treat them as a vehicle, you know, which this language could, is counterproductive to safety on the road. And I wish, you know, during, I don't know when you have to bring this up, but Dorian could do this much better with much more experience than I have. Although, I'd be willing to bet I have more experience than anyone. Just having ridden multiple thousands of miles through Minnesota and other states.
Madam Chair, just to keep things moving forward, I would invite the other Senate conferees to weigh in since this was a Senate provision.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, so we successfully defended the provision, but then Senator Daines you know, brought up the issue. And so I'd be interested in Representative Kahn's response. Of high speed, really, it was about addressing high speed roadways in rural areas. Just the concern of the Greater Minnesota legislators, and Senator Gazelka, you can help me understand a little better what Senator Daines is trying to get at. The 55, 60 mile per hour county roads and state highways. So the change was made a little more extensively than I thought it was going to be to recognize the goals of getting bikes, you know, to be able to use the full right-hand lane, and I think also the goal of allowing bikes to move straight through intersections in right-hand turn lanes in a way that puts them out, you know, in front of cars that we were talking about. So trying to achieve both of those goals, but addressing the safety concerns of high-speed roadways.
Well, the point is, no matter what the speed is, the car has to see the bicycles. No matter what. They also have to see the pedestrians. But on high speed places, pedestrians and bicycles have right of ways of intersecting. So it's another, so it's a, you know, that's another part of the problem. and the limit of 30 miles is really something that means that you have to pay less attention at higher, you know, when there's a higher speed limit. And it doesn't take, I'm not sure, but, you know, most bikes traveling on the, a lot of bikes, let me say, are not traveling on those roads are going faster than 30 miles. No, they're going faster than 30 miles per hour. But that's, but the point is, I as I understand, and as I said, Joy is thinking this far better than I can. You know, most of the places where this, where you need language like this rather than the language that's in the Senate bill would be on roads that have speed limits higher than 30 miles per hour.
Senator Dura?
Representative Kahn, so, you know, I'm a bicyclist, although not as avid as you, or a bicycle advocate. But it's hard for me to imagine thinking it's okay out in the middle of the countryside where cars are zipping along pretty fast to just have bikes traveling down the middle of the... I mean, I just don't know how to talk about that or educate people to defend that. So.
Well, that's why we have as far to the right, you know, as being safe by the cyclists. And I don't think you're looking at people way out in the road. I think that the only time that they might be further out than a car would want them to be is when the shoulder is unusable or when the road is unusable at that point. And I'll tell you, I could, no, I'm sorry, I just changed my cell phone so I don't... know that I think I have them in my Twitter account of those pictures of what the right side of the road looked like. You know, at that time, that was a time when, you know, I was actually probably slow among bicyclists to get out on my bike this spring. But it was a time that I was out and it was not possible to be against the right hand side of it. And this was in Minneapolis, near the university, where there are lots of bikes. So,
Senator Reiner?
Madam Chair, I know this language didn't get a hearing in the House. It was an amendment passed the Transportation Committee and then modified on the floor. Was it a provision heard in the House Transportation Committee?
Mr. Durris?
Madam Chair, Senator Reiner, the provision as the standalone bill version was not heard in transportation. There was an amendment similar to this, but with some differences in language that was offered and was not voted on to a transportation bill. If I recall correctly, the key difference was the as far to the right as determined safe by the cyclist phrasing that was added into this amendment.
Senator Dimmel?
Madam Chair, it was a late bill in the Senate, so it wasn't heard in the Senate Transportation Committee. It was added a subsequent stop by amendments.
Representative Kahn, and then I think we'll move on. But go ahead with your last comment.
Well, the last comment is I think the existing language is better than this language. We think is better and clearer, but we think the existing language is better than the same. And that's as close as practical to the language. It's not clear that there's much difference between the new language and the old language, but I think the amended language is a real problem. Madam Chairman, if I can say, particularly the thing that we have in Section 3 here makes it really, you know, obvious, I think, to the car and to the cyclist what kinds of things we're talking about. And that's an existing language.
Okay, so I think with this discussion today, we will move on. And thank you. Thank you,
sorry that I'm not as much of an expert as I thought.
Thank you.
Okay, so then we have the farm vehicle and then traffic division. Should we work on the farm vehicle first? Okay. We will look at R7 and 8, Senate Section 15. Can we have a summarize a little bit of the issues in this from the Senate side?
Well, Madam Chair, I know there are folks here who'd like to testify. I think if you would like to do that, I would probably help lay out the history and nature of this provision.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, Bruce Clayton. I'm an ag lobbyist here with the wheat growers, barley, all three sugar companies, potato growers. I do some legal work for the Farm Bureau. I often get elected to speak on behalf of the entire group rather than having everybody in here. You shouldn't be too surprised to see me here today. I testified on this bill in both committees, in room 15 on Senator Reiner's bill and in the basement on yours, Madam Chair. We had one issue on this covered farm vehicle that I felt needed to be worked out, and I told the members that we didn't have it ready that day. We were talking with MnDOT and Patrol to try to get this thing figured out. And really, none of us asked for this, the Patrol or MnDOT or myself, to try to get this figured out. The issue we have here is one of federal compliance. And you've seen today many sections on this covered farm vehicles where the feds changed the law, effective October 1st, 2012. States have 3 years to come into compliance with that. And all the sections of one have been taken care of, CDLs, hours of service, and so forth. The MnDOT bill does that, and we support the bill. The issue has been on how we interface that new federal law with the roadside inspections. And in your bill, you'll see on the House side, on R8, Section 11 and 12, those are identical. Section 11 is something called the sticker in the window, we call it. It's the annual inspection sticker. The guys take their trucks to town, they have a certified mechanic to look at it, and if it passes inspection, you get a sticker in the window. That's an inspection requirement. That has been changed in here. And by the way, the growers don't mind doing that. It's a good safety practice, and most of them don't mind it, but the law is changing that here. The second one is something called a daily written report. The guys are required under the law to go around their trucks each day and inspect them. If there's a headlight out or something, they make a note of it, and they're supposed to keep that as a written record. That also was taken care of here. So when MnDOT's bill came, they didn't have anything dealing with the roadside stops. And so back in February, I started asking, how will this new law interface with the roadside stops? Because that's still a function of inspection. I didn't see how we could be subject to inspection and exempt from inspection at the same time. So I spent the session trying to get this figured out. Our interest, by the way, is not to get out of this. I've been driving triaxes and semis for my dad for 30 years, and I would not be too comfortable getting in a loaded truck without brakes. I can tell you that from personal experience. So this is not an effort to get out of something. What I'm raising here is how to comply with the federal law. And both Chairman Hornstein and Dilla will know, in past years we've had this conversation about being out of compliance with federal law. If we're not in compliance with federal law, we must risk $4 million in federal funding. We've had those bills, and we've had to park them over the years because we have to be in compliance with federal law. So I put an amendment together back in, I don't know, March probably, that simply did the same thing as these other sections, which is simply exempted the farm vehicles. We met with the patrol in Senator Scoy's office, and the reason I did that is he had a lot of institutional knowledge on this. He's carried a number of these bills over the years. So we met with the patrol, and they made a valid point in that, how do we know what a covered farm vehicle is until we pull it over and check it out and talk to the driver? It may be for hire or it may be with the farmer, and only the farmer-owned ones are exempt. So we weren't too thrilled about it, but it made some sense. We thought it was worth trying. So the agreement, that's the language you have in your bill. Probably a week or so later, the patrol emailed and said someone had been to a conference. They had learned that, no, in fact, they still can do the roadsides, and that they were pulling their support for that amendment that you see in front of you. So they were opposed to my amendment, then they wrote one they liked, then they opposed the one they wrote, and that's where we are today. I'm just trying to get this clarified because there's a couple books we wrote. These are compliance books. This is for the Farm Bureau. They carry it in their cab, their truck, and it's all about how you comply. It's not how you get out of stuff. It's how you comply with the law. I'm going to update this summer. This book needs to be updated. This is the one I did for the guys in the valley. It has North Dakota in it as well. We're going to update this summer. But we have to settle this inspection thing. Are we subject to the roadside inspections or not? And if not, why not? I'll close, members, by reading you the federal code line. This is out of the CFR. This is the codification the feds did. It's March 14th, 2013. And the title is Inspection, Repair, and Maintenance under Chapter 396. This part does not apply to covered farm vehicles as defined in 49 CFR 390.5 or to the drivers of such vehicles. The King's English to me is pretty clear that farm trucks are not subject to inspections. So I'm simply wondering how we can be subject to roadside inspections at the same time. That's the issue in front of this one.
Madam Chair, that's an accurate summation.
Is there anybody else that would like to go ahead?
Madam Chair, I'm Nancy Silkey, a service agent with Minnesota State Patrol. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some clarity today. Mr. Glavin accurately spoke to many of the issues as far as what led us here today. We had some previous contact, and we're working with them to try to resolve their concern as far as clarity related to these issues. And so we did consult with them at the time, and also with the federal regulations and the people that give us guidance in that capacity. And they gave us some verbal language at that time, which led to the drafting of the language that you see before you today. But upon further discussion at a recent, a National Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance conference, where the director of our commercial vehicle section attended, we were provided further documentation and directed from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration additional information that led to our concern today, that the current amendment or bill language in the Senate bill isn't consistent with the federal guidelines. It actually creates a greater restriction. So at the conference, we were provided the FMCSA memorandum that gives guidance to all states on how to inspect and document those inspections, of which we did provide to Mr. Clavin and Senator Skoy as well. So it should be noted that at the national conference, there is representation from all 50 states, including enforcement, the private industry, transportation industry, and the goal really is for consistent application and uniformity throughout the nation. While MAP 21 federal legislation does include the exemption of certain regulations to commercial vehicles engaged in the movement of agricultural commodities, the covered farm vehicles as we speak about today, those exemptions include drug testing, commercial driver licenses, medical certificates, hours of service, annual and daily inspections. However, the covered farm vehicles are not exempt from Part 393, which is specific to equipment such as brakes, tires, lights, etc., for safe travel. So covered farm vehicles are still subject to inspection requirements per the federal motor carrier policies. And they also are to be placed out of service per the CVSA out of service criteria when defective equipment is found under Part 393. So that would be the section, Madam Chair, that leads us to provide testimony today. Because the covered farm vehicles are still subject to equipment regulations under Part 393, we don't support the language in the Senate bill version. And I do have members of our commercial vehicle section that could address any questions if the committee has any. Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Major Silkey. Can you? I know you provided me that guidance memo, but could you make that available to the committee? It's hard to reconcile this testimony because it seems in direct contrast. So it's hard to sort it out.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The testifier, how are these covered farm vehicles treated? Over the prior years, because I doubt that this federal guideline has changed. So are you treating them different in years past and now there's going to be a change? If you can give me the history of that, I'd appreciate it.
So if I could, I would defer to Captain Sokol from the commercial vehicle section.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. They were exempt from certain regulations to begin with. However, they were still subject to inspection. The thing that's different in with the current regulation that FMCSA has proposed and what they're changing is that it's now not necessarily a documented inspection. It's documented, but it doesn't go against their score because it could have in the past. And that's basically the big difference right now. So even though it's documented, it does not actually go against their score, the driver's or the carrier's score.
Madam Chair, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I don't want to misinterpret it, but it appears that there's been a shift in how we're determining some of the guidelines that were there. Would that be correct?
As far as what was initially discussed?
Yeah, as far as inspections.
Yes, as far as what was initially discussed, it's we did receive additional guidance from FMCSA as what is expected throughout the states, throughout the nation, as far as documenting roadside inspections.
And Madam Chair, I'm looking at the amendment here that we've got, and there is a section on the bottom that says a probable cause exists to believe the vehicle or its equipment is unsafe or illegal, activities suspected, enforcement actions may be initiated. So I feel like we have, in that amendment, we're trying to address their concerns, but it appears to me that the farm or ag industry just want to be treated like they've always been treated, and it appears that this language would do that.
Well, Madam Chair, just not only do I concur with Senator Zelka, I would add that's a reflection of the board conversation when we debated this amendment. I would also add that as chief author of this bill in the Senate, at least this is literally the first time I've heard the state control's concerns. So that it's not always a reflection of the magnitude of the concern, but at least from my perspective, if this were a serious, we can't move forward on this issue, I would hope that in the future we would talk about it earlier before the Congress committee in the rainy days of the Senate.
Any other discussion or anybody else?
Are we gonna wrap this thing up today? Is that the goal? All right. Wow. The only reason I ask is because Ms. Berzovsky is trying to synthesize the guidance.
Well, Madam Chair, I know we have testifiers. I think I'm assuming on the diversion program, since they haven't spoken on anything else. So
yep.
Perhaps we can move on to that and spend a little time there, and then come back and pick this up again.
Okay, are we okay with that? Oh, go ahead.
Hey, Madam Chair, and I just am trying to understand this section on inspections, and this is out of the Federal Motor Carrier document, and it refers to a level 4 inspection. And if I'm understanding this right, so a motor carrier, farmer, etc., that is exempt from hours of service requirements, the inspector may only enter and upload it as a level 4 inspection and must enter farm in special study field number 3, see attachment B. I wonder if the witness could provide some clarity on what a level 4 inspection is and how it differs from 1, 2, and 3, and what this means as far as attachment B and so on.
And just, Madam Chair, before we do, could some staff make neither of the conference committee chairs have a copy of this that's being referenced. So if all the members of the committee could get a copy of that.
So
I think that was a question, too.
Okay, Madam Chair, members. So what it is, a level 4, basically, it's just inspecting what they're subject to inspection of, which is the equipment. And then a level 4 is documented within what's called our ASPEN program. so that there's basically a history of indicating, you know, who the carrier was, who the driver was, and that an inspection had been completed on that vehicle and that driver. In this case, it would only include the equipment. And as I have said, it would not go against a safety score as it would a typical commercial motor vehicle, being that it's documented as a level 4 inspection. So it does not go against the driver's or the carrier's safety score.
So, Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, how does level 4 inspection, how does that line up with the state's spot inspection statute?
Well, under the spot inspection statute that's as written as today, without the amendment, it allows for random inspections of commercial motor vehicles, or in this case, it would be a farm vehicle that would be inspected under a level 4. Again, where it would not go against, it would only be checking their equipment that they're subject to under 393, and again, it would not go against the driver or the carrier's safety score.
Did you have comments?
Just a closing comment, Chair. I failed to mention, too, when the session started, it's never my intent to get into an argument or problem with the patrol. We've always tried to work it out. And I failed to mention that, at least in the beat industry, if we partner with the patrol quite a bit. We have a meeting at American Pistol Headquarters in August. We sit down with the North Dakota Patrol and the sheriffs. We go over road construction projects and safety measures. The guys at Renville put public service announcements on the radio, warning people about the harvest activity and so forth. The patrol reviews the Farm Bureau book. So I want to make sure that everybody understands. My effort here is compliance and clarity. It's not pedantism. So I want to make sure the members have that. Rhetorically, then, if we're still subject to inspections, why are we now exempt from the sticker in Section 11 and the daily walk around in Section 12?
Thank you. We are going to put that to rest for a little bit, and we're going to move on to the traffic diversion programs. It's referenced throughout different parts of the side-by-side. But hello, Senator. So I think we will start with you, Senator Schumer.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thanks for the time on this morning. I understand you've already spent a little time walking through this. The language that's included before you is the result of quite a committee process here on the Senate side. We really worked this hard, and we're kind of at an interesting moment here. We have a growing interest in these programs throughout much of greater Minnesota. We're talking about dozens of them in existence, I know over 36, that have been operating previously. And there's a problem before us, though, and that's a lack of clear authorization as to whether these programs can continue as they've been formed. And taking a step back, what these programs seek to do, if you would allow me, is to give local law enforcement agencies, officers, and motorists who've been pulled over for minor traffic safety violations an option to have a third way here. Rather than a warning or a full citation, an opportunity for a traffic safety diversion class, which educational curriculum that is focused on their offense. And these have been growing in popularity. A lot of folks down in my neck of the woods really like these programs. I hear from our sheriffs, our police chiefs in Wabasha and Dakota counties in particular are very active or have been very active in these programs. I hear from motorists who've had a chance to participate in these programs and take great value in them. In fact, they often ask if their family members or others can join the class because it's of such great educational value. What we're trying to do here is have a compromise solution to move forward for 1 year with a pilot program that would allow us to gather a little bit of more information as to the efficacy of these programs, hear both from the local law enforcement agencies and also from those who participate in these programs, so that we can come back next year in a full session in the budget year and have a conversation about whether or not these programs have a place in Minnesota and how we can, if we decide to do so, authorize them going forward. On the Senate side in particular, we had great conversations, but there was an interest in getting more information. And so what we're proposing to do here is essentially grandfather in those programs that have been in existence and allow the local units of government where they've been in existence to pass with a resolution authorization for these programs to continue beginning June 1st of 2014 and continuing until June 30th, 2015, and allow us for an opportunity 1 year to get some additional information and also allow the next legislature to weigh in on this. Because I think we're at a critical juncture. Most of these programs have ceased operations in the last several months due to a court decision that essentially ruled that Minnesota law is not fully authorizing. It's not clear on what is authorized. And so we're at that critical juncture. If we do nothing, I fear that these may just go away. And if we give them a one-year pilot window to proceed, we have an opportunity to learn from them and to come back next year and make a final decision moving forward or just let them be. So with that said, I know that we've had a lot of conversations with the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, with the Association of Minnesota County Attorneys. We have some folks who would like to speak to the issue today, if you would allow us. And I apologize if I've already spoken too much on the matter, but there's some great perspective here. We've been trying to work with the Department of Public Safety on this as well, and actually the pilot program idea came from them. I'm not sure if they're in love with this particular language, but I'm willing to move on a couple of items here to make this more palatable for folks, if that's the case.
Okay, thank you. Is there, are there others that would like to speak to us?
Yes, I'm from Wabashaw County, and I don't know if everybody in the room is aware of this, but...
We have...
Just a
ma'am, will you come to the table, please?
I'm from Wabashaw County, and I don't know if everyone... My name is Virginia Ellis. And I don't know if everyone in the room is aware of it, but the Attorney General and a state officer and a district court judge has ruled the diversion program in Wabashaw illegal. And there's various reasons for that, very many. That suit has not been settled, and we don't know what the reprimand and the consequences will be for Wabashaw County. I think to turn this program loose statewide, even as a pilot, would be opening a Pandora's box. We have a hearing on June 13th as to how the judge is going to proceed with the consequences toward Wabashaw County. Now, I can't see where this pilot program would be good at this time. I'm not against the diversion program as long as they're legal. But this one was not legal. And Wabashaw took in $450,000 and not one cent went to the state. I sat at board meetings where the state auditor told him this was illegal. This is what they had to fix about it, and fell on deaf ears. The minute that person left, the county attorney would say, in his legal opinion, it was a legal diversion. Since then, a judge has ruled on it and shut it down. The other thing is there's no monitoring or auditing trail of this money that's collected. Also, we've done statistics on the fact that the number of tickets issued first quarter last year, first quarter this year, the difference being that the judge shut the program down. There was 87 tickets first quarter last year, and there was only 40-some this year. So now that the diversion program has been shut down, the ticket numbers have dropped. I also know of personal experiences where people who have been picked up for speeding. The officer was very nice and said he lowered the amount of speed they were going so they could attend this class. You know what that does? Diverts all the money to Wabashaw County. It isn't giving any to the state. So they offer them this program, and they get the money. They've also let the towns and the county run this program. Plainview, City of Wabashaw, and Lake City. They have their own police department, and so they have implemented the program that Sheriff Barsh is running. The interesting thing there is they have to give him $25 for every ticket they write, but he has never been able to speed. So until you can write a clear law I think the statute is clear itself. I can look at the statute and understand what they're doing. So until you can clear up the law, I don't think these diversion programs should be allowed, much less a pilot. To me, if you open up a pilot program for a year, you're opening up a number of law students. Okay. I thank you for your time and listening.
Thank you. Senator Mayor?
Thank you to the testifier and just for the committee's awareness as well as the public. The language that's before us does not authorize any expansion, even under a pilot program. So there's no going statewide. You can see on Subdivision 2, it's a program that existed before May 1st of 2014. So only those already there could continue for 1 year.
Madam Chair, Senator Ryan, so the ones that have already closed, would they be able to open up again, or how does that work?
Senator Smith could testify better. I don't. That's not my understanding.
Certainly, Zilka, great question here. What we're trying to do is actually add clarity. We don't want to see a string of lawsuits play out over the next year as this issue remains muddled. And so what we want to do is have clarity under law and allow for a one-year pilot program to continue. To commence, and only the programs that have been in existence prior to May 1st of 2014 would be eligible for reauthorizing and moving forward. So we're not going to be opening this up to new communities. It's to be frank with you, I think it's a last-ditch effort here to try to allow some value to remain in these programs, to collect data, and to come back here next year with an informed discussion. Otherwise, we'll be more than a year removed, and who knows if we have additional lawsuits pending as well. And it's unfortunate we weren't able to do this in a prior legislature or last year to avoid the uncertainty that's fallen us in the last year. But I think that hopefully folks would understand we're trying to thread the needle here and have an appropriate path forward. And,
one last question. Is there a fiscal note on this one?
Yeah. The amendment came to us late, actually, so we don't have a formal fiscal note, but it does not change the environment that has existed for the last couple of years. It does not allow for new programs to emerge where they already have not. And that was the concern among committees as we worked this through the committee process, that if we had clear authorization and a number of communities were to commence these programs moving forward, that could lead to a significant fiscal note. And essentially, that's what hung us up in the committee process this year. But by grandfathering in only those programs that have been in existence prior, we feel as though that's going to limit that impact. Thanks.
Representative Forstein?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do understand there is a fiscal cost. And I don't know if any staff has that information and how that would affect our budget resolution and budget deliberations.
Mr. Burris, do you know any fiscal note?
Madam Chair and members, I'm not sure of the fiscal cost on that provision.
Madam Chair, if you'd allow me to, we are asking the Department of Public Safety, this is on R12, paragraph C and D. We're asking Department of Public Safety to do two things in here, and one is to establish a survey that all local units of government, their law enforcement agencies, would be able to administer to participants in the program, and then also to gather that information by next January, and provide a report on what those surveys say. We could remove those sections or those provisions in this amendment to reduce the cost to the agency there, and we could try to get that information through the Sheriff's Association, for instance, and collect that data outside of the department if that would be the preference of the conference committee. So that's one cost that we could avoid.
Is there anybody from the department here that would like to speak to this?
Madam Chair, Mark Manasky, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. As the Senator mentioned, EPS has talked with the author as well as other members of the law enforcement community. We have expressed our concerns regarding the effectiveness of traffic diversion programs. As we testified in the previous hearings, we just specifically haven't found any evidence that shows that the wide-ranging traffic safety initiatives really have an impact on reducing crashes. Now, that's not to say, as was pointed out today, the drivers and law enforcement agencies find it worthwhile. Keep in mind that not issuing a citation that costs $150, $175 and doesn't go on your driving record and be able to walk away, everybody kind of walks away in a happy place. Ironically, though, if the objective of traffic enforcement, having a strategic traffic enforcement program in the state, is to reduce crashes, injuries, and fatalities, we just don't know the traffic diversion programs, they may miss the objective. Going down to some of the points that the Senator brought up, specifically this language, the Senate language we are opposed to. The language includes a significant number of traffic violations for which a driver would be eligible for diversion, including two which are very important to the Department of Public Safety and Minnesota Department of Transportation. One being the Ted Foss move over law, which is a statute that dictates that people move from the right lane or slow down when there's an emergency vehicle or crews working on the roadway. And the other is the texting and driving law, which we put a lot of emphasis in because we believe that it has a significant impact on crashes. The second item is that the diversion programs lack continuity and uniformity application around the state. Having statewide consistency in enforcement and education programs that are consistent across the state is very important to DPS and its traffic strategy. And the third, and it's just minor, but the diversion program content, the minimum for the diversion program as listed in this bill is a minimum of 1 hour. And so consequently, you could have a violation and really show up for just a very minimal amount of time to be able to divert it. And in this bill, DPS, as I mentioned, is tasked with developing a form for participants which we're supposed to retain and then communicate back to the diversion programs to determine eligibility of participants. Additionally, the language has us designing a form to elicit feedback concerning participants' perceptions, compiling that data, and then by January 15th, the National reporting back to the legislature a compilation of all these records. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that the enactment date for this is June 1st of this year, with a report due January 15th of next year. So really what you're talking about is a 7-month period of time for the Department of Public Safety to do all that and get a report back to the legislature. And without additional resources, we think that might be problematic. Madam Chair.
Thank you for your report. With that report, is there a cost to that coming before the legislature by January 15th?
We were not asked for a fiscal note. We weren't consulted on this particular amendment, and so we don't really know. Just reading the language, the idea that the Department of Public Safety would have to establish these forms, to collect the forms, work on a process for commuting back to the programs to determine participant eligibility, compile the report, do the analysis, and provide that report is probably going to take some staff time. We still don't know exactly what it is.
Is there any other? We have a few more. Okay. Thank you. Hello.
Good morning. Chair and members, my name is Mark Burkay. I'm the Chief of Police of the City of Minnetonka. I'm also here representing the Minnesota Chiefs Association. I just want to talk briefly about a program that we have that we think is of great value. It's a program that has been shared by the cities of Plymouth and Maple Grove and ourselves for over 10 years now. The program was born out of a NHTSA grant, National Highway Traffic Safety Grant, about 10 years ago. It was a $250,000 grant awarded to just three cities in that particular year. And the focus was on teen drivers. The outcome that we had from that, because we have that outcome, was our teen safe driving program. For the last almost 10 years, we've been conducting this program every other month, having teen drivers come in for most of the violations that are included in the bill that you have before you, the amendment, and with a little bit of expansion. The beauty about ours is that not only do we get to have contact with the police officer teaching the class for 3 hours on a Saturday morning, it's not only the teen, but it's an adult parent has to come with them. So we get the opportunity to not only change the behavior of the teen, but to change the behavior and the driving tendencies of the adult. And I can tell you, without exception, each day when that class is over on a Saturday morning, believe me, nobody wants to be there on a Saturday morning, the adults come forward and say, you know what, I learned a lot, I didn't know this. So we think that this is a very valuable program. Our program costs $25. We rarely cover our costs. We do that because we think there's value. If there is any money that is generated from it, it goes right back into the program. It's not used for anything else, and it is tracked in each department with a particular budget code. We think there's great value, and to Assistant Commissioner Gnansky's comment about we don't think that there's value in it, I guess maybe I'm not using the right word, Commissioner. The problem is that if we don't do it, we don't know if there's any impact. If we choose not to do it, then how do we know? Our program, we did a snapshot in the last 2 years. We had a 33% recidivism rate. That means that there's a significant number of teen drivers that haven't reoffended in the last 2 years. We think that's significant. We think it's worthwhile, and we certainly support this amendment to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Next.
Good morning, and it still is morning. Thank you for hearing me. My name is Anna Mae Norman. I'm a homemaker. I don't have any titles, I don't have any, but I'm a taxpayer. And what I am here to do is to give you some information we think you don't have. Did you get an email through Matt, Chairman Matt? You should have gotten an email, quite a few pages of documentation, people who couldn't be here today. And so in that is, first of all, I can tell you, I respectfully request removal of Senator Matt Schmidt's Safe Driving Program Amendment from the Transportation Bill, HF2214. And then I would like to give you my reasons.
Go ahead, quickly.
Okay, thank you. One of the persons who could not be here, her name is Deb Rushen. She's a Waukesha County Commissioner, and she's been involved in this whole situation. Here's just a quote from her. Did you get the letters and things from Doug?
Yes, we have the whole packet in front of us.
Okay. And it was sent Friday, so we understand that maybe you didn't get enough time to read that. But so I'm going to just highlight a couple of the comments from Deb's. The numbers in Waukesha County reinforce the fact that the safe driving class is all about money. In the first quarter of 2013, which was referred to, while the sheriff was still operating his illegal safe driving program, Waukesha County had 87 traffic citations. Compare that to the first quarter of 2014, where we only had 48 traffic citations. This is nearly a 50% drop in traffic citations after the court enjoined the Waukesha County Sheriff from operating a safe driving class. This demonstrates drivers in Waukesha County stand a greater chance of being pulled over if the money stays in the local coffers versus the money being sent to the state. Can we logically conclude there is a desire to purchase new equipment in the Sheriff's Department? Traffic citations would increase locations that operate a safe driving program. Okay, now here's what happened. The Waukesha County Safe Driving Program kept all the money. They didn't send. There is a safe driving state law regulations out there for a safe driving program. Waukesha County kept all the money. They didn't send any to the state. I call that embezzlement. That's money that the state should have had, that you guys should have had up here, that was kept in Waukesha County. Now, the issue is about how to function these safe driving programs. Here's another comment. Bev Snow. I have studied both the Senate and House versions of the transportation bill. It's on page 2 of Beverly Snow's. Transportation bill being deliberated today, and I'm concerned over several issues. I don't like the bill specifying that the proceeds go to law enforcement because it provides them a direct profit incentive without oversight. That's a situation that leads to budget-focused ticket quotas and law enforcement growing beyond the needs of the community. Government that is bigger than what a community requires is what I can call big government, and it can occur at any level, from local to federal. A law enforcement officer in this bill becomes the judge, jury, and executioner at the traffic stop. They aren't allowed, if they are influenced to take the driving class, they aren't allowed to have their day in court. Waukesha, she repeats also the numbers from 2013 to 2014. Now, the drop in the numbers occurred when Judge Fabian made a decision that these were illegal. that these classes were illegal. The Waukesha County had been told since 2004 that the program they were doing was illegal. We need you to consider all of the information. Please read the testimony of I think it's four people who have added to your pile of paper. I'm so sorry you guys have to deal with all this paper. I can't imagine.
Oh, this is nothing, believe me.
But I just really urge you to investigate this. Don't make a decision. It's a last minute thing to amend it. It's been stopped twice here, but now he wants to put an amendment to the transportation bill. It's not right. So please, please gather all the information before you make any decisions. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi, my name is Merle Norman. You can call us a continuation if you want, but I've been in law enforcement. I understand the statutes a little bit. In Minnesota, we're supposed to have uniform traffic laws across the state. We're supposed to have uniform enforcement across the state. And I'm sure this committee knows that very well. Statutes have already been made, probably by some of you. There's statutes on the books. And when we don't go by the statutes, that doesn't mean if somebody is doing unlawful things, we need to change the statutes right away to make their unlawful acts lawful. I hope we all have that. In this packet that has been mentioned, especially look at page 3. It's a memorandum from the Management and Budget Department of this state. As has been said, the Attorney General and the State Auditor has repeatedly said that these illegal things going on needed to stop. And thankfully, they have been stopped right now. I beg of you folks, don't do 2214 until the judicial system has taken its course. Right now, it's been stopped. Probably all of us are for programs that help for safer driving. That's not the issue right now. Judges have made some decisions, and it's in the courts. Please put this off until next year, whatever. Actually, I think we've had a pilot program for 10 years. We have statutes on the books that tell us how to do our highways as safe as possible. When I was in law enforcement, very concerned about trying to do my best to serve the people. And most of these law enforcement people, I'm sure 99% of them, that's their goal. But right now, there's been money. And if you look at the next page in here, page 4, it tells a little bit about what's happened. And the next 3 or 4 pages after that tells you how many thousands of dollars have been spent on lollipops. Yes. Lollipops, folks. Lollipops to give to the people to get the vote. Lollipops, all kinds of little gadgets. So please put this off for a year or whatever. I beg my senator to put it off for a year to have justice, folks. We all want justice. Let's do it right. Let's let the judges and the courts finish their job before we get in there and try to justify illegal activities. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
I'm sorry, we're done with this one. I can wait until we're done. Okay.
Good morning, yet.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, Jim Franklin, the Executive Director for Minnesota Sheriff's Association. I'll be very, very brief and very succinctly to the point, I hope. Number one, the three E's of traffic safety are engineering, it is education, and it's enforcement. And those are the three E's of traffic safety that we try to promote. Enforcement is the last thing. Number two, I want to make it clear that nowhere in the Attorney General's report, the auditor's report, will you find the words illegal. You will find the words that say not authorized by, specifically authorized by the statute. Number three, we have some counties and programs that continue to operate, and they are operating under the Minnesota statute 609.132, which is the county attorney's right to have diversion over certain types of programs. In the particular case of which this judge made a rendering and ruling in Wabasha County, that was slightly different than some of the other cases that are currently operating and or going on. A number have been shut down out of respect to the juvenile or the criminal justice situation currently, and waiting for the legislature to take some action. We believe Wright County, as an example, has one of the best programs. And we can statistically show you some of the safety things that, if given a little time, how that program has brought traffic safety results down in the state of Minnesota. So we're willing to work on these issues. We think they are very important. We think the one-year timeline, as suggested by the senator, is a good timeline that we can try to bring this back and get more perspective and work collaboratively together. So with that, we would support that, encourage you to support it, be willing to work with it. I have the sheriff here. He can testify and add to any other things, but in the interest of time, we'll forego that unless you have specific questions.
Thank you.
Oh.
Senator Diddle.
So, Madam Chair, I just want to make a pitch to accept this provision from the Senate side. I think Mr. Franklin and Senator Schmidt rightly point out that this is just extending the existing programs for a year, making them legal, so they won't be illegal as was characterized. They're illegal because they're not authorized in statute. We can change that characterization of them by adopting this authority for them. And then, you know, hopefully respond to Mr. Banaski's concerns about efficacy and utility of those, and hopefully we take this year to really understand and maybe look at best practices from other states, whether or not the research really supports doing this. If it drives the adverse behaviors that we wouldn't want, as the citizen justifiers described, if it improves driving outcomes, sorting through the fiscal issues vis-a-vis the state and the local relationship. I think it's important to answer all those questions. Those are important questions to answer. But we have some programs that are on the ground, and to not extend them for at least 1 year means they just vanish into a thin air. So that would be my pitch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to pass on some concerns from on the House side from Representative Paymar, who chairs the Public Safety Committee. He has a lot of concerns about this that he wanted me to express, and it wasn't heard, I believe, in the House. And so, you know, I think from our perspective, I want to, you know, Public Safety Chair, I think, you know, has an important perspective. Of course, we in the transportation field have some say in this as well, but I share Mr. Banaski's concerns as the author of the No Texting While Driving legislation. I hope that in no way are we compromising enforcement of that provision. So I just, again, wanted to pass on to the committee Representative Paymar's concerns and mine as well.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a number of questions and concerns that I wanted to talk about, and a lot of the information that was provided by testifiers did touch on most of those. I noticed that we have 36 programs with different rules existing in the state right now, and I believe it was the last testifier that said there's existing statute that actually does authorize some of those programs, and I'd be interested in seeing the numbers, you know, so we can judge the success of those authorized programs before I could support anything here. As far as the one testifier, the one as far as calling the money issue embezzlement, we call that creative management in government. But that is a concern as well. Are the local authorities dipping into that where they shouldn't be? And then one of the biggest concerns is, and I do appreciate the discretion that law enforcement officials have. I've been the benefactor of that a couple of times out on the highway. But with the discretion that an officer or department levies in Wabasha or Minnetonka, is it the same as in Duluth? So there's a lot of unanswered questions here, and I just don't have enough clarity in my mind to support this.
Madam Chair, if I can just add, we've spent a lot of time in committee on this year, and that's why we're here today, is because I think there's been a lot of recognition that there's value in trying to get some more information from this program, trying to promote uniformity in these programs. However, there's a lot to learn from areas that do it better than others, and what we're trying to do here is essentially strike that fine line to programs that have existed, that have offered value, and we could fill the room up with folks who have contacted me this over the last year about the values of the programs. We just want to have a path forward here so that we can get that information and make an informed decision once and for all. And we're nothing that we're doing today is the final word on this. It's simply a means of continuing that conversation and learning more in the meantime. And since I have the floor here, I'd just like to thank constituents who came up to speak to this issue. We haven't had a chance to connect. And I hadn't heard of your concerns prior, but I really would like to work with you, if this was forward or not, to try to get this in a good shape in a program that we have confidence in moving forward. But folks, I've heard from one law enforcement official after the other throughout Minnesota about the value of these programs in promoting education and safety. And one of the challenges we have is we don't have the data necessarily to flesh that out. And that's one of the things we're trying to accomplish here in this pilot program. Is, well, we have the attention of local law enforcement and local units of government. Well, we have some programs that have been in existence. Let's come back next year more informed so that we can make a final decision on this. And that's I respectfully submit to you, that's the motivation behind this amendment, and that's why we ran the bill through the committee process in the past 7 months.
I'm torn on this issue because I know that Kenny Wright County has a diversion program and find it very, very effective, and they rave about their program, and yet I'm hearing today that there are some programs that meet for 1 hour versus maybe 3 hours or maybe some 6 hours, I'm not sure, a Saturday morning, which is a great, sometimes hindrance, a good punishment on itself, whether or not that's helps with the punishment as well, I don't know, but then the outcome of having education and to be able to reinforce and to show our whether they're teens or adults, kind of a refresher course, knowing that my husband just went through 55 and alive, it's always good to have re-ups on just good traffic behaviors. And personally, as a rural somebody from outstate coming to the metro for two seasons here, those referrals and refreshers are often very good because all of a sudden I'm realizing I'm in with metro buses and, oh, school buses, you stop no matter what. What do I do about metro bus? And, all of a sudden you're just realizing that the rules are different, metro, rural, and all those kinds of things, any kind of refresher courses are important. So this is a tough issue because I know that it's looking at the money issue, the inadequacies of the range of tickets to, I like things in a nice little box, but we're all individuals and as well. So this is tough. Representative Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I think, you know, my personal perspective on this, as well as having an obligation to advocate for the Senate provision, is that a lot of the questions you just raised are answered in this language. You know, right? To be clear, if this committee does not adopt this language, these programs that are out there will continue. You know, some are, like the Wabasha County one, are, you know, in a legal process, but there are others all over the state that, you know, people are getting benefit from. You know, not adopting this language is not going to shut these programs down. What adopting this language does...
Can we just confirm that? I thought the court case... or is it just Wabasha that's under the cease and desist?
That's my understanding.
Madam Chair, just the Wabasha case. Others are continuing. This is not a retroactive to all other programs. It's only to the Wabasha case.
I see.
Madam Chair, what this language does then is provide some structure. I mean, if you read through it, it has the minimums. It gives it some structure. It's only the existing programs. It's only for 1 year. So this legislature is back in January in a full 5-month session. And actually, testifier earlier said really it's 7 months because we get the report in January. Those are both transportation committees where, I know at least on our side, we had a lengthy hearing on it this year and we will have another next year. So, you know, I would argue to proceed in that manner. And for the record, my police chief, I think, is head of your association, so he got a hold of Gordon Ramsey, got a hold of me over the weekend and expressed his strong support. So.
Madam Chair,
sir,
I would just ask that each member read these pages in this report. We had a lady that called every one of these counties and cities, and she got reports in this packet. And one of the counties was actually letting DWI citations get away with only coming to this class. So please read all of these in your packet.
Madam Chair, to that comment with regards to the DWI, if you look at the record, the court will order people to the diversion program for consultation as part of that. In addition, the court also has a DWI version program that they operate. But no DWIs are subject to this.
Senator Ryder?
Sort it out.
Madam Chair, I think we've had good testimony on both sides of this and a good discussion, being mindful of the time, and the Senate is under call. I would move the Senate language. I'm sorry.
Could I amend so that we would remove the FOSS law and the texting while driving elements?
So we need to pull it in, and then we can amend things out.
Or you can move it, or you can just amend the motion to say the Senate language absent the authority to divert if the citation is for the FOSS law and the texting while driving.
Okay, all those in favor of the Senate version
minus exception.
Boss and texting.
Boss and texting. On R10.
We take out 10.31 and 11.3.
By taking out on R10, 10.31 to 11.0.
No, just 10 point, Madam Chair. I'm just 10, line 10.31 and line 11.3.
Oh, okay. And 11.3. So just those two, 10.31 and 11.3.
Do we have to adopt the amendment first, though?
Yeah, that is the amendment.
Gotcha.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those no?
Was this on the amendment, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, aye.
No, I thought the motion incorporated the amendment.
Yes.
So it's on the full motion.
Okay. So all those, we'll repeat that again. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those no.
No.
Motion did not prevail.
I'll ask for any
Okay. All those in favor, raise your hand. All those no, raise your hand. The no's have it. Motion does not prevail. Okay, so farm vehicle, can we go back to farm vehicle?
And Madam Chair, if we look at the sent language on R8, again, we had, I think, good testimony on both sides. I appreciate the state patrol's concerns, but members, I would just draw your attention to line 9.9 and 9.10. The probable cause exists to believe the vehicle or its equipment is unsafe or illegal activity is suspected, enforcement action may be initiated. I think that gives the state patrol the leeway it needs to do the enforcement it wants to do and we want them to do, while still being consistent with the other provisions we're adopting regarding public farm vehicles. So, Madam Chair, I would move the Senate language, lines 9.5 through 9.10, on page R8.
Okay, is there further discussion?
Okay. I move section 15 in the Senate language.
All those, that language, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no.
No.
And the motion is carried. Okay, going up to some technical differences between the Senate and the House section. House section, will let Council please help us out with that?
Madam Chair and members, the first of the two is on page R8. It starts at the very bottom of R8, actually in R9. This is one of the covered farm vehicle provisions. This is in an area of law providing a special permit for some overweight vehicles hauling unprocessed ag products. And what's being added in is a cross-reference exemption. And the differences on the House side, line 8.1, Senate side, line 10.8, both have the same substantive exemption being added in. The Senate language includes a reference to Code of Federal Regulations, Part 391. That part is actually incorporated by reference in elsewhere in state law in Section 221.0314, Subdivision 2. And in that state law, the incorporation of Part 391 is just partial. They're just some pieces of that. In discussions with the department, the House language was modified to not reference 391 here. So essentially that reference is picked up elsewhere in state law.
Okay. So we will, or I move House Language Section 13 language. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. And motion's carried.
And then, Madam Chair, the other covered farm vehicle provision is on page R16. This is House Section 19, Senate Section 24, lays out exemptions for covered farm vehicles in the chapter on commercial motor vehicles. The difference here is on the House side, 12.23 to 12.24, Senate side, 17.8. The House language here in establishing the exemptions from federal regulations is narrowed down to physical qualifications and examinations. If I recall correctly, I believe that this was something that MnDOT had requested upon further review of the law as the bill was moving through, and had requested something that was a little bit narrower in the establishment of the exemptions here.
Again, Madam Chair, unless MnDOT has... Scott, Mr. Peterson, do you have any input on that?
It's in the House.
I would move the House language.
Okay, the House language, Section 19, 12.23, 12.24, to adopt that language. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. And motion's carried.
That, Madam Chair, concludes the...
Excuse me, Madam Chair, could I just ask for a clarification? Because I know that on R3, the Senate only paragraph C was rejected, but was the entire section adopted? Because there are technical differences, and I didn't recall that it was adopted, but maybe I missed that. Yeah.
Madam Chair, I guess I should have finished my sentence because that's where I was headed next.
Okay, very good.
On R2, there is the remaining provision on MnDOT's review of land for bike ped facilities prior to sale. There was some discussion of the Senate only piece of this. There are also some differences between House and Senate on the language here. House Section 3, Senate Section 5. There's some phrasing differences. The House requires an analysis to be done, whereas the Senate language could be read that in some cases an analysis wouldn't need to be performed beforehand. The House language also includes on 3.3 and mainly on 3.4 suitability of the property or a portion of the property for sale, so it potentially covers partial property sales. The House and Senate have essentially the same language on one of the original substantive changes, which was to provide for sales where there's a use of the land protected for bike ped facilities via a deed or covenant or other easement. So that on the House side is 3.11 to 12. The Senate side is 3.23 to 3.24. That's the same between House and Senate on that substantive piece. So the rest gets sort of more of these other phrasing analysis and partial sales issues.
And Madam Chair, I think they both get us to the same place. I'll move the Senate language. I think it's just a little more concise and clean.
Excuse me?
But not C?
No. Section 5. C was already in left.
Okay, is there any other discussion with that?
So I'll move Section 5, but not subdivision, or not Section C. In the second one.
Madam Chair?
Yep.
I think the department does prefer the Senate language, but if we could add that phrase from the House side or a portion of the property.
So starting on 3.3 to 3.4, that little bit.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, could we have staff work that language into that?
So, Madam Chair, just for the record, to be clear, I'll move the Senate language, Section 5, not including Subdivision C, with a direction to staff to include the language around or a portion of the property found in House Lines 3.3 and 3.4.
Is that okay? Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those say no. Motion carries. That brings us, does that bring us to the end then, Mr. Burroughs?
Madam Chair, I believe so, unless there were pieces that the conference committee still wanted to revisit. We covered all of the provisions in the discussion, at least.
Okay, and so now we need to bring forward House 2214, or no.
The final motion.
The final motion.
Madam Chair, I think we still have one vice for thing that we need to talk about yet. No, go get Mr. Gray.
No, I don't think so. We're not taking any action.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I didn't update you. I had proposed to make the motion and was advised to set a rest.
Okay, so the Downs Amendment is
not included. Correct. So nothing will be taken. All right.
So to make sure I'm clear, so we just revert back to the language that's always been
existing law.
Existing law.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So now what we will do is move to adopt the conference committee report. All those.
And Madam Chair, with the what's that magical phrases, giving staff direction to what they need to do.
And giving staff direction to make sure that we did it right.
Pull out of them, do what needs to be done.
Catch up motion.
Great. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. And motion passes. And with that, we're adjourned.